We have come in solidarity to serve and truly to walk in the footsteps of our colleagues, both Navajo and non-Navajo, serving the Navajo people and being extra hands, extra skill for them to complement what they're already doing just because of the overwhelming surge of patients coming in with coronavirus.
And what are your first impressions of the situation in Gallup?
I think it's really two. It is enormous concern around the surge that's happening, specifically in the setting of a people, specifically speaking of the Navajo people who have survived such incredible and continue to survive such incredible historical trauma, and in many ways being ignored or abandoned by a healthcare system. And so living with incredible levels of chronic disease and limited access to care. And on top of that, this surge of what for some patients specifically living with those diseases can be incredibly severe infection. I worry a great deal. That's one of my first impressions. I worry for the community and getting enough care and access for them. And the second is honestly just incredibly being overwhelmed and moved by the level of, I guess, the depth to which those who are caring for this community at all times, every single day with those challenges, the depths of reserve and compassion that they continue to find, that our colleagues find, nurses, doctors, nurse assistants, volunteers, everyone at every level who is already working so incredibly hard serving this community and now have just been dealt this incredibly increased need and severity of illness, and how they have risen to this occasion in a way that it's emotional, it's overwhelming, it's inspiring.
How are you helping there? I know you've only been there a few days, but
sure.
Is there a typical day, or are you just...
That's such a good question. Rarely in my life is there a typical day, but a day is starting to materialize for me. My particular role with one other, and this is just in Gallup, we have 8 people here, and then we have the rest of our group from UCSF, some are in Chinle and some in Shiprock. And so our group here, our 5 nurses are working in the emergency room in all of the emergency first triage area, and 1 is working in the ICU. So they have more typical shifts and days. The 2 of us who are doctors who usually work in the hospital have had this unbelievable opportunity and have been asked to help with a program that our colleagues who are 2 doctors in the Gallup Medical Center, they have started a program out of deep concern for our unsheltered patients. I mean, it's, again, one of the most inspiring things I've ever seen in my life. They have moved the Department of Health and all of the different facilities within the city of Gallup and have secured funding to pay for hotel rooms, individual hotel rooms for patients who need shelter. And so my job and my colleague's job is that we are literally making rounds every day. My hotel is Howard Johnson's, and we are checking in on patients who have chronic diseases. We are checking in on them, how their coronavirus is doing. If they don't need to be hospitalized, they're recovering in the hotel. And then also continuing to check in on them in a setting where they really don't have a safe place to go. And in this situation where coronavirus is widespread and a lot of the shelters are closed and services are shut down for safety, we are trying to be that added layer of support for them.
What type of work were you doing at UCSF before you came?
So my career has been in hospital medicine, actually. So this is a different role for me. I usually take care of anyone who comes into the hospital who needs care and stays in the hospital. So I either take care of them myself or I oversee medical students and resident trainees. And so I'm also a teacher and a professor at UCSF and providing that training and oversight. I guess oversight's not that. Coaching more so is really the right word for trainees. So that's the bulk of my job. And then within my larger sort of career mission, I also work within global health education, and that can mean many different things. But in my career, it's meant that I help to serve as a coach and a mentor and an advisor to those in limited human resource settings. So where there aren't enough doctors, where there aren't enough nurses, where there aren't enough healthcare providers who can really train the next generation. And so I help to provide that education and coaching on an ongoing basis. So my personal connection actually to the Navajo Nation and the work being done here is that I am an advisor and have been for 5 years to the HEAL Initiative, which is a fellowship that is in 9 different nations, and I count Navajo Nation among those nations. Mm-hmm. But my primary site where I work is in Liberia, in Africa, and I work with fellows there and go twice a year. But with the HEAL Initiative, I also do some train-the-trainer kind of work where I'm a coach for how to be a better teacher to healthcare workers, if that makes sense.
I'm wondering, with all of those experiences, mm-hmm. if you wanted to share your perspective on how this public health system works or isn't working, or...
I first and foremost want to be really open that I'm not here full-time, and so I certainly don't see much of how the health system, specifically the Indian Health Service, is, and so I don't work constantly within it.
Okay.
I can speak to the broader health system. I know some of it, but I don't work in it day to day, is what I do mm-hmm. want to say. I worry a great deal that our larger health system in the U.S., again, magnified in the Indian Health Services section of that, is that we are profoundly underserving our poor population, you know, and I use that word, I know it can be loaded, but those who are unable to maintain a socioeconomic sort of lifestyle that otherwise gives incredible privilege. And so I just worry that if you look at the coronavirus pandemic, who is it hitting the hardest? It's our Black citizens, it's our Latino citizens, it's our first citizens, and in the form of our Indigenous people. And that is such a very clear sign. That is not biologic. Those of our community who are being hit the hardest, it's not because of something in the virus. It's because they are chronically living with so much more disease and so much more illness, because they're not being served. They're, you know, patients with diabetes, with asthma, with emphysema, with heart disease. Our population that is not white, I will be very open, is living with so much more disease and hardship because of the way our society and healthcare system is set up, that it is a gross failure of our health system is something that I will say. And something that we see every day as health providers across the country, and is magnified that much more. Just, you know, the fact that anyone who is a beneficiary of IHS, Indian Health Services health system, receives almost less than a third of what anyone who has Medicare or other insurance is receiving in yearly health care, mm-hmm. is such a clear sign that we're not even able to build the systems that they need, whether it's outreach, whether it's education, whether it's meeting them where they are culturally to understand how best we can complement traditional healing and the cultural practices that are already leading to resilience and healing in their communities, and how can we complement that appropriately. I think all of those systems are failing. I know that's a long-winded answer, but...
Okay.
I think it's been so incredibly obvious to so many of us working in the health system, and I'm deeply hoping that the public will hear these numbers and understand that this has nothing to do with our being different from each other. It has everything to do with what access we have and how we live and how we're able to live. It's not a choice. It's imposed upon them by our society and our healthcare.
Not everyone would sign up for this work. Why do you do it?
I know we use this word a lot. What is solidarity in the form of an action that I think so many people who work in these environments, meaning limited resources, very challenging health systems, working with patients who have such incredible need, both in healthcare and in their lives, in order to be healthy, to be well.
Okay.
It just, I think for so many of us, it feels impossible not to show up and to walk with those who are doing this work every day. Because the reality is that, yes, maybe we get attention as those who come from other places, but my colleagues here have been working for 6 weeks without a day off, 14-hour days, taking on incredible amounts of need and rising to that in a way that inspires everyone who has come to come and give them respite, to be partners to them, and honestly, truly walk in their footsteps. The work that I am doing is as an implementer. This entire program to give shelter and to give comfort and an ability to become well to all of these community members who are otherwise unsheltered and don't have this safety net. It's my colleagues who have created this whole system, and they have said, we need people to come and see these patients. And so this is nothing that we have created. It's all what they have created. And it just feels impossible to stand by and witness. It doesn't feel like enough, I think, to all of us, and so many others who want to come but for various reasons are unable to, because ultimately it's really to walk with and behind all of our colleagues who are here. And the reason I got so emotional is because of that, seeing their resilience, my colleagues' resilience, and their the doctors and nurses in every level. I mean, the incident commander at Gallup Medical Center is a dentist that who has risen to this and is completely running so many of these efforts because he's unable to see patients. And so he has become literally the commander of this effort in so many ways. And so it's, you know, there are ophthalmologists who are doing work that they weren't necessarily trained to do, but they're filling every need for the community. And so I just really hope that the message that will come across with this interview is that it's not really about our coming here and what we're doing, but if there's any way for us to help turn that spotlight and really show what our colleagues are doing day in and day out in the absence of coronavirus, and now magnified by this virus as well. This is why we come. We come in solidarity.
Can you paint a picture for us what it was like in San Francisco? Because you've now literally flown into a hot spot.
Right. San Francisco, I think, for a variety of reasons, some of which we're still trying to figure out, has been incredibly fortunate to not be. And I would say, other than Santa Clara County, which is one of the counties south of San Francisco, the larger Bay Area has been largely spared. I will say one of the enormous parts of it is the very early physical distancing. We choose to call it physical, not social, because we still hope that we can make social connections as we are such social creatures and need that for our well-being. But the physical distancing, our governor and our city, very early on, I was actually in Liberia in the beginning of May, and I was returning on March. I was in Liberia at the beginning of March and was returning on March 14th after my work there with our fellows there. And that was when everything was really becoming clear that physical distancing was critical to staving off and slowing down how how much the surges were going to happen. And I returned after I left, and 14 days later, I returned to a city in lockdown. And so very rapidly, as early as March 14th and 15th, the Bay Area was had full physical distancing. And so we have had very, very few hospitalized patients and thankfully very few deaths in the entire Bay Area and in all of California. There are a couple of hot spots, but other than that, things have really shut down. So other than, you know, living with what I think we're all mourning together, mm-hmm. the loss of how our life used to be, mm-hmm. and every, you know, so many people have lost people in their lives to this virus, but as we're still living through that, and so we are all together in that experience, but we have not remotely experienced the fear and anxiety of knowing that so many people are coming down with coronavirus. And I believe just 2 days ago, the Gallup Medical Center alone had 50 new cases tested positive of the drive-through or the ED or whatever tests were done in whatever setting, just in that center alone. And that is an enormous number. And so we have been incredibly shielded. Whether or not there's an actual scientific reason also, I think largely it was a societal, you know, social thing where we distanced physically. But whether or not there's been a lot of theories, and honestly, I think there's a lot that's going to be, it might take years to really sort out the scientific and biologic pieces. So I really honestly don't even know what to think about if there's another reason that we, that the Bay Area was spared for now. Mm-hmm. Cause we really don't know enough. I think there's a lot of speculation, and I worry about an enormous amount of speculation diffusing the information of what we do know. And we do know a fair amount, but there are some outlying pieces that we're not sure of. So the physical distancing, I think, is the key in how we've been able to get through that. And our hospital itself also relatively early universally masked. And so we moved, I believe, the third week of March to universal masking, which meant if you stepped in the building, you had a mask on. And so that is something that our health system also very rapidly implemented to be sure that those who were asymptomatic, despite our constant hand cleaning, that we didn't inadvertently actually cause spread within the hospital, the workers themselves.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for your time and for
my pleasure.
Your very thoughtful answers.